and thank you for tuning in to Faith Worship Center's weekly sermon. We hope you are inspired and encouraged by this week's message as we all live to bring more of heaven to earth.
Let's get right into it, though, here. Matthew chapter 2. Here we go. I'm just going to read. Now, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of Herod the king, Magi from the east arrived in Jerusalem, saying, "Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we saw his star in the east, and we've come to worship him." When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all of Jerusalem with him. Gathering together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. And they said to him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for this is what has been written by the prophet." I'll skip ahead. Then Herod secretly called the Magi and determined from them the exact time the star appeared, and he sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search carefully for the child, and when you have found him, report to me so that I too may come and worship him." After hearing the king, they went their way, and the star which they had seen in the east went on before them until it came and stood over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. After coming into the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they fell to the ground and worshipped him. Then opening the treasures, frankincense, myrrh. Then, having been warned by God in a dream not to return to Herod, the Magi left for their own country another way. Now when they had gone, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, "Get up, take the child and his mother, and flee to Egypt, and remain there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to destroy him." So Joseph got up and took the child and his mother while it was still night and left for Egypt. He remained there until the death of Herod. This was to fulfill what had been spoken by the Lord through the prophet, "Out of Egypt I called my son." Then when Herod saw that he had been tricked by the Magi, he became very enraged and sent and slew all the male children who were in Bethlehem and all its vicinity, from 2 years old and under, according to the time which he had determined from the Magi. And that was to fulfill what the prophet Jeremiah had spoken. Skipping ahead. When Herod died, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt and said, "Get up, take the child and his mother, and go into the land of Israel, for those who sought the child's life are dead." So Joseph got up, took the child and his mother, and came to the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus was reigning over Judea in place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there. Then, after being warned by God in a dream, he left for the regions of Galilee and came and lived in the city called Nazareth. This was to fulfill what has been spoken through the prophets: "He shall be called a Nazarene." So they had to fulfill all these prophecies along the way. All right, let me stop there for a second. This is how Jesus was born and what he was born into. This is all the circumstances of his young life as a child. Born in a manger because there was no room in the inn, right? Even that. Born into an awkward family dynamic. The virgin birth, Joseph not the natural father, stepfather in that culture. Super awkward dynamic there, right? Can you imagine the stories and what people thought of that, right? Herod, an evil king. They had to flee their hometown to Egypt for years. I don't think we know exactly how long we're there, but probably quite a few years until Herod died. But then Herod's son was evil, so they couldn't even go back to, you know, where they were from there. They went to Nazareth. Herod killed all the children under 2 years old. This is what Jesus was born into. You would think if God, you know, designed this plan, he'd make it all perfect. Ooh, nice king, good ruler, good social climate. Everybody loves the family. Everybody loves Jesus, right? He didn't seem to be too bothered by those, what we would think is pretty important details. Yeah, not too funny so far. Sorry about that. Anyways, I'm going to keep going. Yeah, so I was like, oh, she's talking a lot about jokes, but I do have a serious point to get to. I have a very simple point to this message, but I'm going to take a very long journey to get there, because if I said it in 2 minutes, then what fun is that, right? Let's keep going in Matthew. So I'm going to read a bunch, and then I'm going to talk. But so Matthew chapter 4, now Jesus, when they come back, so they're back in Nazareth, and he's older. His ministry started at this point. He was led up in Matthew chapter 4. Jesus was led up by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. That's a whole thing right there, right? But we're not going to get too into that one. But so this is just an occurrence, you know, as he kind of started his adulthood, his ministry. And he had fasted for 40 days and 40 nights, and he became hungry. And the tempter came to him and said, if you're the Son of God, command these stones to become bread. But he answered, it is written, man shall not live on bread alone, but every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. We know this occurrence pretty well, but just in case we don't, just for context. Then the devil took him into the holy city and had him stand on the pinnacle of the temple and said to him, if you are the Son of God, throw yourself down, for it is written, he will command his angels concerning you. On their hands they will bear you up so that you will not strike your foot against the stone. Jesus said to him, on the other hand, it is written, you shall not put your Lord God to the test. Again, the devil took him to a very high mountain, showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their glory, and said to him, all these things I will give to you if you fall down and worship me. And then Jesus said, go, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God and serve him only. Then the devil left him, and behold, angels began to minister to Jesus. Then Jesus begins his ministry, right here, I guess. Now when Jesus had heard that John had been taken into custody, okay, let me skip ahead here. So this is still chapter 4. Calls the disciples, his ministry in Galilee. Jesus was going throughout all Galilee, teaching in their synagogues and proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom and healing every kind of disease and every kind of sickness among the people. The news about him spread throughout all Syria, and they brought to him all who were ill, those suffering with various diseases and pains, demon-filled people, epileptics, paralytics, and he healed them. Large crowds followed him from Galilee and the Decapolis and Jerusalem, from Judea, from all beyond the Jordan. Okay, so this is now his ministry. He's being tempted by Satan while during a 40-day fast when he was hungry, when he was vulnerable. He resists that. He stands on, you know, the truth, his core beliefs, the scripture, you know, knowing who he is. So he withstands that. Then even in his ministry, he's surrounded by all the sick people that, you know, were being brought to him, people with all sorts of problems, diseases, issues, death, whatever it was, the people with demons, all these issues, just surrounded by that. But those external outside circumstances, they didn't navigate or control his outlook on life, his core ministry, right? So I'm just trying to paint a picture. This is all just for background context, okay? I'm just going through these first couple chapters because it's not all just smooth and how you would probably write the story, right? Of his birth, of his childhood as a migrant, fleeing for his life, all the children around him, what's happening there, an evil ruler, you know, Satan coming to tempt him, you know, just surrounded by negativity and really tough life stuff, right? Just encountering that constantly. We get overwhelmed, you know, when we go through hard things that we go through, it's tough to encounter that. And you have to remember, Jesus in his humanity felt emotions, because we can flip the God switch and go, well, he was God, so he just, you know, magically was able to process it and handle it. You know, we're a bit different. But you have to remember his humanity with his divinity. He had emotions too, just like us. That's why he came as a man. So that's just some background context for Jesus' life. Tough stuff, but he didn't let that tough stuff, the political circumstances, the political and religious and social and cultural things that were going on, those weren't the things that really drove him, that really guided his life and his internal belief system. Let's keep going here. Oh, so Lynn 2 weeks ago spoke about she started the Beatitudes, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Then last week, Daryl spoke on the second Beatitude, blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. So, I feel like I should mention the third one, and whoever's speaking next week now has to mention the fourth. So, we're just going to keep that going. Not planned, but that's how it is now. So, the third one, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Wow, we got a woo-hoo on meek. That's good. Usually meek doesn't get that kind of a woo-hoo response in our culture, right? Meek is so kind of misunderstood, definitely in our current American kind of context. But so meek, a better translation might be gentle or humble. We can think of it like that. But meek is usually associated with like meek and mild, or, you know, meek kind of rhymes with weak. Not kind of. It does rhyme with weak. So we can just associate meek with weak or mild and just kind of passive. And that's not really the right, the full context there. So meek would be gentle, humble, or Sometimes we like to call that power restraint. But I think that, again, is a very American understanding of it. Like, hey, I got a lot of power, but I'm going to restrain it. Like, I'm packing heat. Just saying. It's almost threatening if you interpret it that way. So I'm not sure if that's the most accurate translation, but we like that one probably the best here. Anyways, so what's interesting is in Matthew chapter 4, we're reading about when Jesus was tempted by the devil. At one point, the devil says, look at all the kingdoms of the earth. If you worship me, you'll have all that. You can have all that power, all that control. Isn't that tempting? Isn't that appealing? And Jesus obviously rebukes him in that. But then a chapter later, I think it's interesting when he says, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. It's almost in direct contrast to what Satan was offering him. It's like, no, it's not through that. It's not through that channel, that system, worshiping that. It's God has a whole different system of how to get power, how to get influence, how to inherit this stuff. It's not that. I know you're trying to trick me into that, but it's something totally different. And you go through the Beatitudes and then the Sermon on the Mount, which he goes right from the Beatitudes into the Sermon on the Mount. And it's all that. It's just, you think this? No, it's that. And that's just so much of Jesus' life and ministry. And so much of what he taught us is the Pharisees, the religious leaders, the political leaders of the day were thinking in their arrogance, this is how you get close to God. And Jesus just constantly was just trying to go, no, see those children over there playing in the dirt? That's actually it, right? Thank you. that's so much of it. You have heard it say that this, you know, I don't want to get into the whole Sermon on the Mount, but it's just so different than what our instinct is as humans a lot of times. We want to get power a certain way. We want to gain influence a certain way. We want to get to God a certain way. God's always messing with that in a good way, in a better way. But it's tough. It takes you know, time, prayer, meditation, studying the scripture, spending time with God to kind of understand that the systems of this world we're in that are so tempting or so, not even tempting sometimes, just they just pull you into their orbit. You just have to release yourself from those systems and give yourself over to this counteractive system that God has set up. That's his way. That's a much better way. So that's kind of just a background basis of what I want to talk about a little bit here. Jesus was our great example of meekness, right, throughout his whole life. He didn't exact revenge on Herod or Herod's son. He basically doesn't interact with that at all, right? It's just that happened. They flee. He came back. They kind of adjusted their plans. His ministry moved forward. Didn't matter what about these evil rulers of the time. Didn't matter the social stuff that was going on. He didn't succumb to that. He stayed meek. He stayed gentle. He stayed humble. He stayed focused on his mission, on his beliefs, even up to death. And the leaders at that time that were also corrupt in the system he was in that put him to death, the religious and political leaders. He stayed humble. It said in Isaiah 53:7, he was led as a sheep to the slaughter, and as a lamb before its shearer is silent, so he does not open his mouth. So in the midst of all that political persecution, corruption, religious persecution and corruption, throughout his entire life, he stayed faithful to his beliefs, to his unique purpose in life. And he's just our great example of meekness, of how to live in the system that God has for us. That's what he was showing us, is we can do this, right? Not easy. I'm not saying, it's not like it was all just magic and easy for him. It was tough, right? He needed to be ministered to by angels. Like, the angels were there right away when the devil was done tempting him. That almost shows, like, okay, he needed that comfort. He needed that relationship afterwards. There's obviously many times in the scriptures where it shows his emotions and his need for friendship and, you know, ministry and counsel from God, from the Holy Spirit. I'll throw a few jokes in later on. How about that? yeah, I've said this before, but yeah, he did not exact vengeance on the rulers of his day that tried to kill him as a baby, that killed all his the other boys that were babies that, you know, would have been his age. They made his family into fugitives. He did not come back with vengeance for them, but he said, you know, you've heard it said this about your enemies. Actually, you're going to love your enemies, right? You're going to pray for the people that persecute you. Totally flipped, totally insults our idea of justice and what's right. And I'm kind of a justice person, so I get that stuff. If somebody does something bad, that's bad, and they should pay for it, or whatever that idea of justice is in our mind and our culture. I get the justice thing. I have to remind myself of that mercy aspect, that meekness, that stuff that Jesus was all about. All right, let's keep going here. The disciples pretty much seemed confused as to Jesus' mission, like, the entire time. If you read the New Testament, if you read the Gospels, they just, it's kind of funny, but kind of sad. They just don't seem to get what's going on, right? The whole time, it seems they think the Messiah, that Jesus was going to be this conquering political, you know, hero, right? That was just going to come in and do the vengeance thing, wipe out the Romans who had, you know, conquered Jerusalem at that time during their time there. They thought he was going to be this conquering political king, right? Doesn't it seem that way? They just seem confused. And that kind of goes back to something we see throughout Scripture, from the time of, the Israelites with King Saul, right? They wanted a king. God's like, you don't need a king. Like, no. Trust us. We want a king. If you give us a king, it'll all be good. We know. Right? So he's like, fine. You get a king, King Saul. Turned out suboptimally, I'd say. You can read more about that. Here, too, it seems the disciples were like waiting for that king, right? Just be a king, be a political ruler. You know, we'll get the government on our side. We'll stock the cabinet with, you know, evangelicals, and it'll be good. Jesus is like, not the plan. So, is any of that true today? Oh, this is where I'm going to get into trouble. Do we still think the way that humans thought for those thousands of years? We're living in an interesting time, right? Politically, socially, culturally, church, Christianity, all that stuff. I feel it. I shouldn't ask questions, but you're feeling it, right? We live in a real interesting time with all this stuff. Just like Jesus' time. That's why I wanted some of that background context. Look what Jesus was born into politically, religiously, socially. Real interesting time. Look at everybody else that's ever lived, that's ever been born. They've also been born into an interesting time, politically, socially, with the, whatever rulers and systems that they were born into. And the same is true of us. I'm not going to diminish that. It is a weird time where we've gone through some stuff. Just these last couple years, we've gone through real stuff. Just like Jesus, just like the disciples, just like you name it. But it doesn't make it not true. But it doesn't mean that now is the bad time and getting worse. And the times before, those were okay. But we're in a, right now is really bad. I don't want to... I don't believe that. I don't believe that. So that's the simple point I'm going to make. I'm going to spend a lot more time making that point, but that is the simple point. If I could name this message something, I would name it the greatest message ever preached ever by anyone in history. But if that's too long for the podcast, I'll name it this. It's going to be okay. That's okay, so we like the second option, not the first? Because I kind of like the first, but okay, we'll go with option two. It's gonna be okay. I think that fits better. And that's what I said. My point is simple. I could stop there, but I'm gonna keep going because I have some notes. Jesus did not predicate the success of his life and his ministry on the political and social climate of his day lining up with his belief system. Didn't factor into his thoughts at all, it seems. Jesus was successful in spite of what was happening around him. All right, so this is not a political message. It's not. It really is not. In fact, I'll try to show you, I'll attempt to show you that this is not a political message. And then, in fact, our belief in the gospel, our belief in Christ, our relationship with God, that is separate from what is happening in the political and social climate around us. That stuff's important. I'm not saying to be pacifist and just be agnostic when it comes to politics and social stuff. But we got to separate the two more so than I think I do and a lot of us do a lot of the time. So it's not a political message. So don't read that in. It's interesting. The last couple times I spoke, people kind of recited back to me like some of my points I was making, and it wasn't at all what I was saying, which is fine. But we all filter. You're going to filter everything I say today through a lens, through a political lens. Whatever, what you think I might think about people or issues, that's fine, but you probably are wrong. or maybe not, you could be right, but that doesn't matter. Don't try to filter what I'm saying through a specific lens if you can try to avoid it. Because like I said, last time I spoke, people were filtering what I was saying through their lens, which we all do, I get it. But try to hear the main point I'm trying to make and not try to filter it through a political or social lens that's too specific. Anyways, that's just my, I just wanted to mention that. All right, so not a political message. So, but I will talk about politics and culture a little bit, just because that's what we think about a lot, right? We interact with that a lot in our lives. It's a lot of us do. I do. I sit with social issues a lot. I think about political issues a lot. But politicians and the news have to put quotes around the news, because news is, I don't even know if you can label it news anymore. You have to be careful what we consider news. And that's not conspiracy theory stuff. That's just saying our sources of information have become pretty suspect, it seems. And they probably always have been that way. But anyways, everybody, you know, that seems to be running for positions of power, or the news, or the people that are kind of in charge of narratives, want to tell us how bad things are all the time, it seems. That's just, it's good business for them. It's terrible for the culture, for society, but it seems to be good business for them. Politicians, they do a lot better if they can get us to be fearful. It just works better for their campaigns, because you have to say, things are so bad now. Things are the worst now that they've ever been. But if you elect me, things will be better. It's kind of that king thing. If you just get me in power, and they all do it. That's why I'm saying don't filter this through a person, right? Filter it through the system. Everybody wants to be the person that's going to save the day. And if I was running for a position like that, I would have to say something like that, because you can't go, hey, elect me, elect my opponent. It's all good. About the same, no matter what. You have to say, that guy is the worst guy that's ever lived, and we are all going to die if he stays in office, or you can elect me and things will be the best they'll ever be in the history of the world, right? You have to use these huge statements, and they all do it, and we fall for it a lot of times, and it scares us, and because it's working, right? And the news will do that too. They'll tell you all the worst things that are happening, because they realize we have like a negativity bias that we're a lot of times not aware of. Psychologists will call it the negativity bias. Bad news impacts us more than good news. Why is that the case? You could hear 15 great stories about great things that are happening, and then you hear this one bad thing, and that's the thing that sticks with us. That's too bad. You know, we should try to rewire ourselves so that's not really the case. But, you know, a lot of these corporations, they know that, so they'll just hit us with bad news because it kind of keeps us wanting more for some reason in like this sick way that, you know, it doesn't feed our purposes in life. It doesn't feed, you know, our soul, but we just keep eating from that trough, it seems, as a society. I'm not saying all of us do this. It could just be me. You guys could be like, wow, what's this guy up to? Anyways, let's keep going here. But I don't want to, I can't believe that this is the time we live in, it's really bad now, it's going to get worse. I'm not going to believe that just because they're trying to feed us that. The thing I'm going to keep coming back to is it's going to be okay. You know why? Because it's always going to be okay. And it always has been okay, even through difficult, difficult times. We make it through. We make it through. So I'm pretty familiar with four things in life. The Bible I know fairly well, American history, music, and real estate. Those are kind of like the four things I know about. And I'm not going to sit up here and talk about, you know, appraisals and interest rates. So we're not going to talk about that. We're not going to talk about music right now. Well, I could maybe someday. So we're going to talk about the Bible and American history. I'm just going to stick with a couple things I know. So let's do a very brief history lesson of our fairly young country, if that's okay. Anybody, does that interest anybody at all?
Yeah.
Okay, that's good. It's good enough for me. So when you study American history, if you have, and I'm sure a lot of people in this room have, and maybe more so than I have even, when you study American history, it actually gives me hope for our future when you go back. It doesn't make me feel super sad and depressed about today. I look at the past troubles and adversities we've been through, and I go, oh, phew, they dealt with some stuff too. Okay, all right, we can do this. So I'm just going to go through a few of those things. I'm going to say all these things that we've gone through, tons of adversity, issues, struggles, and then if we have time, I'll get to some good news at the end. How about that? I say that because I'm really scared that that's going to happen. I'm going to say all these terrible things that are really tough to read about, and then I won't have time for my positive stuff. So I'll go quick through the bad stuff. How about that? Let's just go back to American history. If we think it's so bad now, things have gotten so out of control, we're so corrupt now, we have so many issues, the last couple of years, pandemics, and young people, what are they doing? All this stuff. When's the good time? I guess that's the question I'm going to put out. Don't answer me. Somebody's got a date, probably. 1972. No. But seriously, because I think about that, because we're saying this all the time. Boy, it's getting bad. Boy, young people. Boy, politicians. Boy, the news. Boy, big pharma. Boy, all this stuff. All these rules. And yes, there's some issues there with all that stuff. But when was the time there wasn't an issue? So let's go back to our history. I'm just going to breeze through some bullet points here. Would it have been in the revolutionary time? Is that those were the good days when we fought the war, when all of our leaders put their lives on the line and basically should have gotten killed by the British but miraculously didn't? Would it have been at Valley Forge? Just bring ourselves to Washington and his troops in Valley Forge, that dark, hard winter. They had no food. They had nothing. They were tired. They were sick. They were sitting ducks, basically. The British were really close by. The British could have come in and wiped them out easily. Miraculously, didn't happen. They were okay. But were those the good old days at the start of our country? We romanticize it. We do the parties and all that, and it's fun thinking about these founding heroes, but they weren't having fun back then. What about even... So I'm trying to go back to the beginning, because I want to catch you guys, because you'll go, well, you know, it's bad now. Started good, or no, maybe the middle was good. I'm going to try to figure out when this time was that it was so great and awesome and good, and it would have been much better for us to be Christians and be Americans and to live. The first cabinet, Washington's first cabinet, totally full of political bias and fighting, and they all hated each other, and it was rough, and it was not a good time. That's the first cabinet. Totally a mess, right? Hamilton didn't like Jefferson. Jefferson hated Hamilton. Adams hated Hamilton. Burr hated Hamilton. Everybody hated Hamilton. And, you know, Madison hated Hamilton. Yeah, they all hated Hamilton. They all liked Washington, but they all fought with each other. Knox, the war secretary, he was MIA. It was an absolute mess. And this is under George Washington, who's like the guy, right? The revered first American, first president, whatever you want to call it. One of the greatest presidents. It was just tough. How about during his, I think, first term? The 1793 yellow fever pandemic. 10% of Philadelphia was killed by that pandemic. That's where the government was at that time. They had to flee. This yellow fever, No cure, no medicine. They've kind of tried a few things, didn't work. Just 10% of Philadelphia wiped out by this thing. It ravaged the city, ravaged the government. Not good times. We didn't have the access to some of the good side of science, medicine, and pharma that we have now. And I know we're not Eagles fans here, so I was going to say, you know, who would like if 10% of Philadelphia is wiped out today? Don't answer that question. You shouldn't even be thinking that way, okay? So, how about a couple years later, when the sitting vice president of the United States killed Alexander Hamilton, who everybody hated at the time? Killed, sitting vice president, killed his political rival. Whoops. Never was put in jail, just kind of lived his life. Oh, and after that, he tried to, seditiously overthrow the United States government. He tried to get down to Spain to have them come and overthrow the government. He was slapped on the wrist and went on his way. Is that the good time when everything was great and people were, you know, much more dignified leaders? A couple years after that, the British come back. Battle of 1812. I think the first and only time we've had an outside army invade our shores. How about this? Imagine this scene. So Battle of 1812, the British come back. We're at war with them again. President Madison at the time, him and his wife Dolly, are the last to flee the White House as the British take control and burn it to the ground. President Madison riding away, looking behind him. White House burning, Capitol burning. British have taken over the city of Washington where the government was. Do we feel like that would have been just really inspiring? Good days ahead, right? This is a good time in American history, right? As an invading army burns the White House and the Capitol, you know, as the president flees. Tough times then. We got through it. There's a lot more I could go through. I know this is super depressing. I hate that. But as a 7 on the Enneagram, this is just odd. Why am I talking about this stuff? You know, I shouldn't be going there. But I have a bigger point I'm making here. How about the Trail of Tears for the Native Americans, the first Americans? Anybody of Native American descent here? Does anybody have any ancestry with Native Americans? No. Tough time for those people in our country. How about, the biggest one, slavery. It's happening all throughout all this. Do we think we'd want to go back to that time for any reason? Were those the good days? I mean, even if you were of a different race, it's unfathomable to go back to that time in society. And that was happening all along. And we knew the writing was on the wall from the very beginning of the country. That had to be dealt with. And they kicked the can down the road as far as they possibly could, trying to ignore the issue. And then it finally culminated in the Civil War, where 620,000 Americans died. That's, equal to the total American fatalities in the Revolutionary War, the War of 1812, the Mexican War, the Spanish-American War, World War I, World War II, and the Korean War combined. That's how many Americans died in the Civil War. It's equal to the amount of American casualties in all those other wars combined. Devastating. Devastating. Obviously, tore the country apart. Literally, states were, you know, removed from the Union. Then after all that chaos, and the president's shot, right, at the end of that, probably one of the greatest, if not the greatest president we've ever had, you know, potentially, in the midst of that. Then Reconstruction having to come back and unify together again. So are those the good days? I'm trying to find that moment that was so great and good. Let's go, so after that you have Reconstruction, Jim Crow laws, a lot of growing pains there too, coming out of that era, right? You have, then I'll go quick here through the 1900s, World War I, then the Great Depression, kind of a boom, boom right there, then World War II, not too far after that, and I think a lot of us are, I'm fascinated with World War II history. I have been my whole life, and a lot of people are, it seems, because it's almost unbelievable to fathom what was happening in the world at that time. All the confluence of different world leaders, and you know, you have Mussolini and Stalin and Hitler and the Emperor of Japan, and all these actors and characters at play at the same time with just the most hellish stuff that you can ever imagine. It's all just happening right there, and that was not that long ago. My grandfather's fought in World War II. There's people that are still alive today that fought in World War II that have lived through that. There might be people in this room that were alive during World War II, you know? You don't need to raise your hand. but this is not that ancient history. Tough time in our society, in the world. Evil rulers, political unrest, obviously war. We got through it. We got through that too. We're still here. And then even after that, I mean, you have the Kennedy brothers and Martin Luther King being assassinated, social and civil unrest in the 60s and 70s. Vietnam, the draft, just a horrible, terrible war. It's not that long ago. We're still feeling some of the heartache from that and, you know, some of the loss that we felt as a country. The Cold War. I hear stories about, you know, my mom and people of that era going to school and doing nuclear drills where you would hide under your desk in case a nuclear bomb went off. I mean, what were they teaching in schools back then? I don't know. Like, by the way, nuclear bombs are bad, real bad, but there's one thing they can't get through is school desks. So, keep that in mind. Praise God. We would believe anything. We still do, right? We're like, oh, man, so silly back then. And then they say something like that today, and we're like, yep. I don't know. This is part of what I'm trying to weave into this message is we're humans. We're basically the same throughout the generations, even though stuff changes and advances. We're still dealing with us, our minds, our culture, you know. Anyways, let me keep going fast because that was depressing. And I have a positive point here. But anyways, do you want to spin the wheel? I've thought about playing this game. Let's spin the wheel. And so bad now, you can go back to any point in American history. You're going to spin a wheel. It's going to randomly land on a year, and you have to go to that year. Who wants to play that game? I don't know. I'm not playing that game. I'm okay. I'm okay right here, right now, right where God has us. It's okay. How about world history? Because we do this thing, too, where we're like, I'm getting a lot of texts. I'm hoping people aren't saying, stop talking. Okay, no. Stop with this enraging political message. We go, well, kids were better in the 50s, though, in the 60s. You tell them to hide under a desk from a nuclear strike, and they do it. Nowadays, kids don't believe you. And, you know, we have our growing pains with kids and that, like every generation does. But let's go back. Let's go way back, all the way back. We'll go to the first kids ever. Right? Cain and Abel. Just start in the beginning. Because if I go somewhere else, it'll be like you cherry-picked that. You went 1,000 years back. Of course, kids were bad 1,000 years. Of course, they were bad whenever. Just go from the start. Right out of the garden. One kills the other. The first kids. We started rough. Okay? But it was okay. We're still alive, right? Somehow, don't think about it too much, how we're still alive and how that all happened. But they had enough kids, and eventually it got less awkward over time, and here we are, thousands of years later. It was okay. So that's all the way back. What about throughout ancient history? Brutal. We know it's brutal. We read about it in the Bible. We hear about it, you know, if we research history, the ancient civilizations. Noah, time of Noah, we want to go back to then, when there's one good family, just one. God's like, they're all bad, I guess that one, even Noah was, some of the stuff he did is a little bit like, oh, okay, he was the one good one, but God said so. So he was. Those were some tough times. Sodom and Gomorrah. How about that? That's a good example. We always, we kind of refer to that now. You know, this city, basically Sodom and Gomorrah. We're still using that as like the example. Whenever a city's bad, we're like, oh, it's basically turning into Sodom and Gomorrah. Sodom and Gomorrah, if we research it, is really pretty, pretty bad. Like, kind of worse than a lot of our cities that have some issues right now. Okay, so that's first. That's ancient. We know Jesus' time. We know all about that. I gave you that context. All the apostles were martyred. Jesus was crucified, obviously. The apostles were all martyred, except for John, who they tried to boil in oil, but he survived. So they tried, and he survived. Everybody else was martyred. Nero, horrible leader. We know all about this. I'm saying stuff that we're fairly familiar with, but I'm trying to paint a picture here. I'm going to say all these things that make us upset, and then I'm going to get us to a good place if we have time. How about the Dark Ages? They're called the Dark Ages. That one just speaks for itself. And it was like 1,000 years, too. We think about like a tough time in society. It's like, man, yeah, the Cold War is bad, or World War II, those are bad. This was 1,000 years, approximately, of the Dark Ages, where they named it that because society, culture, science at the time was in decline. It was morally declining after the Roman Empire and all that. It was like, we're in this decline for 1,000 years. And in that was some tough times, too, the Crusades. The Black Plague that killed 50% of Europe. Yeah. Tough times. Real tough. So do we want to spin the all-time history wheel, too? Which year in all of history, from Cain and Abel to now, you spin that wheel, you're going to go there. Because it's pretty bad right now, right? Who's thinking now is actually not as bad as they thought before? Is now seeming a little better to anybody? Just after all that, can you say it seems a little bit better, right? At least a little bit better. I'd like to go back. So I like American history. I'm of Irish descent, too, so I'll research Irish history. It's interesting because you can like romanticize like Ireland. I can, or whatever a lot of people do. It's a beautiful island. Let's just go back to the early days of Ireland. No, it's all Vikings invading and killing everybody. It's all it is for like 1,000 years. And the O'Neills and, you know, Brian Brew and all these people just at war constantly. Not only that, when you start off in real ancient times, just simple things like eating. They'd make a meal, but because of the unsophisticated way they did things, there'd be like little pebbles and rocks in their, let's just say, potatoes. I'm imagining that's all they ate was potatoes. No. But whatever they cooked, there'd be little rocks in it. So their teeth were just mangled. Just all the terrible teeth pain. We don't imagine that. We don't put ourselves in that position. If I have a little toothache, I'm like, I can't do anything today. Like, I'm out. Right? Their teeth were so destroyed because there was rocks in their food. I'm not going back to that time. So, I've got a couple minutes here for the good news, and we're going to get there right now. So, all that to say, we do live in a time, I'm not dismissing the troubles we have. I want to make sure I didn't miss any bad news. I think I gave it all to you. Because I could keep going, right? So, just be careful thinking that these are the bad times, as if there was a time where it all lined up. The ruler was perfect. The churches were perfect. Medicine was perfect. We had it all figured out. Kids were perfect. That time doesn't exist yet, right? Not yet. But we move forward. We believe. We have faith. We trust. We're meek. In spite of that, this stuff that's happening doesn't dictate and navigate our life's purpose, our beliefs, if God's good. Again, Jesus, all these negative things, all the sickness, disease was brought to him. He could have started saying, wow, life's messed up. And then if his disciples, which they probably did for all we know, they were like, yeah, remember when you were a kid? Remember what Herod did? He had to leave? Yeah, yeah. And then his son was even worse. Pontius Pilate, not a good guy. You know, they could have gone down that road, just like we can. We do. I do sometimes. Look at all the disease. Look at all the people in pain. Life's messed up, man. Life's tough. Yeah. But that doesn't drive us. That doesn't dictate our belief in a good God that still does good things in every generation, in every time period that I mentioned, God was still doing good things. in spite of the bad stuff, in spite of the bad systems. God doesn't need the perfect king, the perfect church system, the perfect Pharisaical. He doesn't need that stuff to accomplish his purpose. He just needs us. You guys. Thank you. So, here's some evidence. Here's part of the problem. I'm going to end on this here. Part of the problem, it's really messing with us, is we have so much more access to information than any of these other generations ever did. Like, even just up to, like, the 80s or 90s when I was a kid, like, it's changed so much. I think that's really what's messing with us the most. Why would we think this is terrible? Wow, our politicians are corrupt. They've never been corrupt before, except for all of human history, right? But we think it's bad now. Look at these guys. You know, it's because we see it every second of every day on our phone or TV or a friend. We're inundated with it all. When you're sitting there eating the rock, you know, potatoes in Ireland, you don't know how messed up it is on the other side of the world. You just have your own little, you know, and big issues to deal with. But right now, we're dealing with all of the world's issues. It's too much. And because of that negativity thing where we kind of lean into that a little bit too much, we don't appreciate the good that's going on. So, it's not that the world's getting worse, it's that our access to information is just getting better, which means we see that bad stuff. So here, I can make a strong argument, very quickly, that the world is way better now, in so many ways, than it ever has been before. And I bet if we played that game, you would be praying that it lands on 2023. Extreme poverty. I'm just going to say a couple things. The list of good news that I tried to, like, copy and paste was way too long to put in here. So if you want to look up what's going good in the world, go online, research. There's tons of lists of all the ways the world has been improving. Extreme poverty is way down across the globe over the past couple centuries, even the past couple decades. Way down, like plummeted. Look at the graphs. People have more access to food and clean water than ever before. That's huge. That's kind of one of my examples, right? Just having food, clean drinking water, we take it for granted. I'm, you know, like, it's just, we expect it. Think about that. What if you didn't have clean drinking water? We do, and a lot of the globe does. That's awesome. Childhood mortality rates are way down, like way down. That used to be a huge thing for all of civilization up until fairly recently. And if you look again at the graphs, you know, that's why life expectancy, you know, 100 years ago was like 30. It wasn't because most people died at 30. It's just because of that childhood mortality thing. And, you know, it was really a big issue. That is way down. Life expectancy is way up across the entire globe. Homicide rates, you might not believe this one, but you can look up the stats. Homicide rates around the world are way down. You know, you go back 200 years, you go back a couple thousand years, and even, again, the last couple decades, homicide rates around the world are way down. That's good news. We wouldn't get this from the news, from social media. People are healthier as modern medicine has eradicated many diseases, and we have more education about healthy lifestyles, you know, stuff that Wendy's going to be talking about. We're more educated how to eat healthy, how to be healthy, how to exercise, how to eat right. That's great news. Literacy is way up. People are much more educated now around the globe. This isn't just in America. This is around the entire globe. People used to not know how to read. Like, a lot of people didn't know how to read. Labor laws are better now. Childhood labor is way down around the world. That was a huge problem globally for so many centuries. All of civilization, pretty much, up until fairly recently. We have access to much safer transportation than ever before. I'm reading a book right now on Lewis and Clark, them, like, walking across the country. Like, just insane stuff. Like, just the way people did it before, the last 100 years or so, just crazy, you know? You can appreciate what we have now if we go back into the past. That's kind of why I was drawing out some of those examples and why I do appreciate studying American history and world history, because you just have that perspective that we're just not getting on a daily basis. It's like, wow, the people before us, they did that. Wow, They did that. They had to deal with that. I think I'm okay. I think it's going to be okay. God still did amazing things in that time period. Well, what's our excuse? How could he not move now? How could he not move when we have access to transportation, food, water, more leisure time? You know, labor rates are better. We're living longer. How could we not take advantage of all the good news? The list goes on and on. More of the world is a democracy than ever before. So even politically, the rulers around the world, I know it doesn't feel that way, but we're moving in potentially a really good direction globally, macro, big scale. We have to believe. Or else what do? Lose our faith in humanity? Lose our faith in God? We don't ignore the injustices. We don't ignore the social stuff that needs to be dealt with. But we don't focus on the bad stuff. We focus on what is God doing now? What's he going to do in my life? What's he going to do with the good that he's given all of us in this time we live in? We could miss out on some really cool things that God wants to do in the next couple years if we choose to just go down that path of, yeah, I guess we're done. I guess we had a good ride. I guess our best days are behind us. You know, the patriotism's gone. Our good leaders are all gone. No, it doesn't have to be that way. You can choose to believe that, but you might miss out on the good things ahead that God's going to do in this country and this world. So we don't want to give up our power and our effectiveness as Christians by believing a lie that things are so bad. We've come through a lot as Americans. We've come through those dark times. And we are going to do it again. It's just, are you going to be a part of that as Christians, as Americans, wherever you're from? Are you going to be part of that movement into the future, into making the world even better than it is now? Blessed are the meek. Blessed are those people Jesus is talking about, us. They are going to be the ones that inherit the earth. It's not the system, that other system that gets you there. It's the meek. It's going to be okay.
Thanks again for listening to this week's message. If you'd like more information about our church, visit faithworship.org.